Good morning. This is Sunday, September 28th, 2025. We're continuing our study of the chapter, I Am That I Am, Chapter 5. And let's see, we left off here, so we'll start here. Do you not see that a practitioner never should love his patients or his students merely on the human level of love? The love should be the love of God and be universal, impersonal, and impartial. Then, when the patient or the student requires a lift, that divine love is there to lift him, whereas human love could never do that. Let us remember that human hate and human love are not power. Human hate is a quality that we all want to see disappear from the world and be replaced with human love. We who are on the spiritual path, however, must learn to rise above human love to the divine love, that love which is impersonal, impartial, and universal. Now, I have been watching the news, and I have been seeing all the division and hate stemming from human beings in this country of the United States of America. I have seen them shoot from a rooftop and take out Charlie Kirk. I have seen them shoot from a rooftop at ICE agents. I have seen them create false narratives. There's just a lot of hate. The Republicans hate the left, and the left hates the Republicans. And that's a divided house. But he tells us here that human hate is without power. Almost everyone in the world is saving money, so far as he is able, for his children or his grandchildren or for those who are to come after him. But how many of those people, except those few who are in the bracket of the multimillionaire, how many are dividing a part of their wealth with the children who are not their own, or the grandchildren who are not their own? See, in the spiritual life, to practice human love, leave things to your grandkids, there's nothing wrong with that, if you want to stay a human. But here is a man that did not stay a human. He made the transition from human to Christ consciousness right in front of our eyes. We saw him do it. We heard what he said. And here he is telling us we must gain that divine love, which is impartial. I don't give to my grandchildren only. I must give impersonally to the people and children that aren't mine. Now, we see a lot of advertisements for charities. What comes to mind is St. Jude working on children with cancer. And I bring that up because I donated to them one time. Only once, because they hounded me with letters. And I got tired of it. So, I had to come up with a different way to give impartially. Now, how many are taking even $1,000 estate and dividing half of it in a universal sense of love? No, no, no. Usually, the person with $1,000 or $5,000 or $10,000 leaves it to one, two, or three persons, and these one, two, or three, his own children or grandchildren. You see the difference? There is no sense of universality or divine love in that. That is the same as if we were taking our income and spending it on ourselves and our family. There's nothing spiritual about that, nothing loving about that. It indicates a degree of selfishness, not love. So he's pretty strict about this. We, at some time on our spiritual path, must begin with some sum like 5% or 10% of our income and learn to spend it in a universal sense, to spend it on something that is of no benefit to ourselves or our family, something that is universal for education or religion or for the children of those who cannot afford things, or for orphans, or for old people. You gotta learn to double talk. In reality, there are no old people. But speaking of every day, there appears to be old people. So we learn to walk this walk. And sometimes we have double talk. All right. It must be for some purpose that is impersonal and impartial. Now, I had an idea one time, and so I followed it through with action. I had a little extra money, and I gave it to a black organization for black kids, inner city kids, and I gave a donation to that. Now, that had absolutely nothing to do with me or mine. I have no idea where it went, except I know that it went for the inner city kids. Now, I bring that up because that's the way that I interpreted that principle. That's the way I practiced it. Sooner or later, as we do that with 5% of our income, or 10%, we shall find ourselves doing it with 15% and with 20%. There are people who are giving 80% of their income to some impersonal universal purpose and are still finding sufficient for themselves and their families. Now, I believe Joel is one of those people who gave 80% of his income. 80. lived on 20%, and still had enough to live in Hawaii and fly around the world, stay in London, stay in South Africa, stay in Hawaii, stay in Chicago. So he proved this principle. And I think he was rather fond of the university there in Hawaii and donated quite a bit to them. There are all kinds of ways that you can take 5 or 10% of your income and give it away to reputable charitable organizations. Human love would force us to take all that we have and spend it on our own loved ones. Universal love permits us to begin, at least in a small measure, small degree, to be impersonal and impartial with our money, thereby saying that this wealth is not ours. It is of God, and because it is of God, it belongs to the world. It belongs to the world of God's children. You see the difference? When you do that, when you practice that, you'll find you're sitting on a pot of income that never dries up, like the cruse of oil. It never runs out because it's God's, and it's going to God, to God's children. All right. Spiritual love shows us how to be impersonal and impartial in our love. It shows us how God's rain falls on the just and the unjust. It shows us how the impersonality of God's word is expressed. It shows us why we can heal sinners as well as saints, and that sometimes it is easier to heal sinners than it is to heal saints, because the saint, as a rule, represents a high degree of selfishness. Now, I didn't understand that when I read it. The saint, as a rule, represents a high degree of selfishness. Seems like it would be unselfishness. He says, watch this. It is one of the most difficult points on the spiritual path. Spiritual love is very different from human love. Spiritual love transcends human love, and yet spiritual love is made manifest in human love. It is a mystery and a paradox. There are lots of paradoxes on this path. You have to give it away to keep it. That's one. If every truth student in the world would begin to express spiritual love, we could raise the world in one generation. But we have to begin with ourselves, since the I is God. We are the ones who must express the love of God, not the love of man, but the love of God. We must express that love universally, impersonally, and impartially. When we express that kind of love, then we shall know why human hate or human fear is not a power. How can it be a power over the I that I am, which is God? But how can I be claiming for myself I-hood, Christ-hood, when my entire experience is centered around demonstrating things for myself and my family? This is the reason that many of us end up in spiritual healing, because Christ is called to a higher level of living and loving. And so in spiritual healing work, we are loving all of creation. In human love, we may love our relatives, our nieces and nephews. We may love our immediate family, our spouse, our children, our grandchildren. But rarely do we venture into universal love. And so on this path, we are called to practice certain principles which make us a healer. And that's universal love. This is all wrapped up in a tidy little package. In this work, we learn not to draw love to us, but to let it flow out from us. Yes, that's another way. Do you see all of these principles, if followed, will allow you to practice being Christ? If you're pouring out in an impartial, impersonal way, that's Christ. If you're doing healing work, loving that way, that's Christ. If you recognize the I that I am within you, that's the recognition of Christ. These principles allow us to practice Christ. Now, we learn that God is not a power that is outside of ourselves, and yet God is a universal power. God forbid that God should do anything exclusively for one person. God is universal law, which must be manifested and expressed as you and me individually, if we are to claim that I is God. We cannot say that of the personal I. We must not make such a statement and then later deny it in practice. Once we have made the statement that I is God, we have to bring our life into conformity with it. If we accept this teaching, we accept the fact that the I is God, and then each of us has to begin living as if I were God. In other words, you have to begin living as the Christ. That means to stop living to me, or attempting to draw good to me, and instead to begin living out from me, and to include the universe in my love, not just my wife, my children, or my grandchildren. Yes, now, you can do this, your 5 or 10 or 15%, if you recognize and realize that this is God's supply, and therefore there's no end to it. So don't worry about the end, just live here in the middle. God is my supply, and I pour out God's supply. Therefore, I always have supply to share. If I make it mine and make it personal giving, I will run out. The I, which is God, never criticizes, never judges, never condemns. And when it does appear to do those things, it is not for the purpose of judging, criticizing, or condemning, but in order to bring to light the error of the situation that it may be transformed. What does that mean? It means we're not interested in criticizing, condemning, or judging. We're interested in practicing Christ. And Christ will always reveal the error so that it may be transformed. There still persists a teaching in some metaphysical movements that there is a mental cause for physical effects, such as that resentment causes rheumatism, or hate causes cancer. I do not say that. In criticism, judgment, or condemnation, but only to point out the error of the teaching. So never criticize, judge, or condemn, merely in the sense of criticizing, judging, or condemning. But use your criticism, judgment, or condemnation as a constructive power for the purpose of exposing the error and correcting it. The I which I am is the source and center of the world's good. The I which I am is that point at which all the infinity of God pours itself into the world. So reverse yourself. Stop living as a human being, utilizing the things of God for your own benefit. How often does he say that? We've got to come up higher. We've got to reach a place where we stop asking for better income, a better companion, or a better body. See yourself as that place in consciousness through which God pours itself forth to the world, to that world which is not yet aware of its true identity. Just as the lighthouse is established for the benefit of the ships that must pass by and have the benefit of its direction, so are we the light of the world, that those not yet aware of their true identity may be lighted on their way. It's all about pouring out, giving, sharing, loving, but coming from the I within, the I that I am, not from a human. I had a period in my life where I fell in love with God. It was after my wife left me, and through that pain that I suffered, I transferred my love to God. And I made it my business to pour out every day some impersonal love. And I tell you, it was the most fantastic and beautiful period I have ever lived on earth. It was wonderful. God came alive. I saw God in my own experience. I poured out God to the best of my ability. Most of the time, I just got the heck out of the way and let God do the talking or the serving or the giving. And what a wonderful life. All right. So this next section says, Spirit reveals itself in the silence. Remember, the silence is not an absence of sound. Silence is an absence of self. And Joel says, I want above everything else to emphasize the fact that human evil is not evil, and human good is not good. Human evil is not power, and human good is not power. Now, when we are called upon in any experience of our own or another's for help, please remember, first of all, no amount of human power, no amount of good human thinking is going to solve the problem. So, if you sit down to meditate and you have these human thoughts coming, human thoughts of love or human thoughts for spiritual being, in other words, you're thinking about spiritual being, none of these have power. And so as soon as you can, you need to get back within yourself to the center of your being, and there, behold, I come quickly. In the silence, when you're not thinking, the presence of Christ reveals itself within you. Ah, thank you, Father. Thy presence is my sufficiency. There is a spirit in man that does the work. The spirit itself, that spirit which is God. So there's a spirit within you, which is God, which is the I that I am. But to become acquainted with it, you must enter empty-handed. You must enter in silence. And there you will see and behold and bear witness to Christ. No amount of human love, no amount of human goodwill is going to help us lift another's burden spiritually. No amount of human good thinking is going to help us heal another's disease or infirmities. It is the Spirit of God made manifest as our individual consciousness that does the work, and we must become imbued with that Spirit. And how do we become imbued with the Spirit? With Spirit? We do that in silence. In meditation. Not through being good human beings, or moral human beings, or by taking pride in how good we are. There is a spirit in man. That spirit is in the good man, and that same spirit is in the sinner. God is no respecter of persons. God is omnipotent and omnipresent. God is our very own consciousness awaiting our recognition. So when you recognize your consciousness is God. Well, behold, the Christ is born. Through your recognition, Christ is on the field. The moment we turn to it, whether we turn to it as a good human being or a bad human being, it begins to manifest itself, and from that point on, it dispels all our qualities of evil and many of our qualities of good. Now, we think of God, we think of the presence, we think of spirit as something that dissolves our disease, it dissolves our loneliness, it dissolves our lack and limitation. We don't think very often about God dissolves our good, our human good. All of human has to go. In order to be Christ, the human must die. And that includes the human good. Oh, we're really willing to let the human evil disappear. But the human good? What will I be? I'll be the hole in the donut. On the contrary, the minute you die completely to self, you'll be the living spirit, which is infinite, which is eternal, which is mortal. And that's what we'll be. We'll be everything and everyone. He says, I receive letters every day in the week from people I have never met telling me what the reading of the Infinite Way literature is doing for them and how it is affecting their experience. These letters tell me how things which had been wrong in the lives of the writers have been righted and how things have smoothed out in their human affairs, in their physical and in their bodily affairs, since applying these truths. They are evidently among those people who took my words in the chapter on meditation in the book The Infinite Way literally, and who therefore began to acknowledge their oneness with God from morning to night. Yes, because we're making a transition. We are being transformed by the renewing of our mind. No longer seeing just a limited human life, limited human finances, limited human love. No, we open the door to infinity. There's no end to God's supply, no end to God's love. And we become channels through which it can flow. Probably, they were the people who glimpsed the meaning of the chapter on immortality and saw that immortality does not mean longevity in the flesh. It means the eternality of consciousness shown forth as a physical experience. As they embodied these truths in consciousness, they found expression in their experience. And that's the whole secret. In silence, you receive an impartation. It may be, peace, be still, I am with you. And we practice that. We pause several times during that day. Peace, be still, I am with you. And then at night, before we crawl into bed, peace, be still, I am with you. And if we wake up in the middle of the night, everything is dark, everything is quiet. We go to our meditation chair. Peace. Be still. I am with you. And this becomes a working part of our consciousness. We come into the conscious awareness that I am with you. We come into the conscious awareness of peace, of silence. That spirit in man reveals itself. Let us now consider what is known as the law of karma. Many people are held in bondage in their own thinking to the beliefs of their past. That is one of the most difficult beliefs we have to eradicate, this belief that our past human experience, even here and now on this plane, is acting as a law to prevent our further development. In all our treatment work, let us handle that suggestion specifically. Let us know that no human experience can ever find expression in our spiritual life. That's a heck of a statement. That needs to be contemplated, I feel. No human experience can ever find expression in our spiritual life. When you wish to help anyone, meditate. Try to realize the presence of God. You will soon be able to carry on all healing work through meditation, simply through getting quiet within. Then, when a problem comes, mental, moral, physical, or financial, you will resist the temptation to think thoughts, to make affirmations or denials, or to believe that in any way your human thinking has power. Catch this vision that your human thoughts are not going to heal anyone of anything, no matter how good those thoughts are. No matter how powerful they seem to be, they are only human power. Now, what does that mean, they are only human power? It means they are only mental. And it's not by might, not by mental, nor by power, but by my presence, by my spirit. If you can realize that in meditation, in your quiet, and in confidence, there is peace. In the stillness, in the joy of the silence, there is the presence of God to be realized. Then you will have learned the whole secret of the seers, the saints, and the saviors. Yes, the secret place of the Most High is your silence. It's your inner temple. As you attain the silence, as you sit still, as you wait upon the Lord, that's your inner temple, and that's where God is. That's where that spirit is. That's where Christ is. The greatest secret in the entire world lies in that word, silence. That silence means the ability to sit in peace and let the divine realities unfold. To let God speak. To let the Spirit voice itself. to let truth express itself. This does not mean destroying the human senses or the human intellect. It means utilizing them, using them, letting them be an avenue or a means through which you become aware of the presence of God. In meditation, in a peaceful and serene stillness, God makes itself manifest as power, as presence, as healing, as supply. But you see, it is God that has to do the work. It is God, the divine reality of our being, showing itself forth in the glories of what appear as wonderful human experiences. Christ in you, your hope of glory. And so, learn the meaning of peace. Be still. Learn to let this act as a treatment, and not by merely saying peace be still, coming through the lips, but peace in the body and in the mind. The more you attain this reflective state of thought, this inner calm, peace and poise, the greater the power of the Spirit that comes forth to transform your world. Knowest thou not that I am with you? Know also that all that I have is thine. To repeat those words merely as statements is not power. And we learn one day they're not even true. That has been the tragedy of organized religion. It accepts such statements as truth when they have not been proved in experience. The only true statements voice themselves to you in the silence. In that silence, truth itself speaks and manifests itself. So your goal must be to attain that silence. I of myself can do nothing. Nor can you of yourself. But I can be still. I can contemplate until the mind slows down, and then I can take a deep breath and rest in silence, in receptivity. And I can feel the presence of God, the presence of that Spirit. And it manifests itself. There's nothing I have to push through or pull through. I have to let. L-E-T, let. The more you attain this peace, this inner calm, the greater the power of the Spirit that comes forth to transform your world. And that silence, truth itself, speaks and manifests itself. For a minister to preach these words, or for a practitioner to tell them to you, does not make them true. It is when the Word is with you and within you that it is power. Those who recorded the Word in Scripture received it within their own being, and that is why it became living water. But when we repeat the Word of God through the lips, it is only a quotation. Let us remember that. If you can hear within your own silent being those promises that are in Scripture, They will be a law unto your being, as they were to Elijah and Elisha and Paul and all the other spiritual leaders. You see, when you think a truth, it has no power. It's just a thought. And human thoughts for good are not power. And so nothing changes. Everything is the same. The lacks, the limitations, they stay. But if you can be so silent, so still, you can hear an inner voice, and it will utter itself. It will reveal itself. It will manifest itself. And you really and truly do bear witness. When you're in a courtroom and the judge says, "Let us hear from the witness," then the witness comes forth and says what he saw. "I saw a man in a yellow t-shirt, and he such and so." And so, in the courtroom, you are bearing witness. This is what you saw. In meditation, you're bearing witness to the spirit in man. "I got quiet. I became still. I rested in the silence, and suddenly it revealed itself. And I bore witness. Spirit is. God is. I am that I am." You cannot find God in the intellect. Oh, that has been tried so many times. I understand every one of these statements of truth. Should you ask me, I can give you a written essay on the meaning of these statements. I can even do research and look up what scriptures they reflect. All of that is in the capacity of the intellect. None of it will heal anything. It won't heal anything. Well, you say, "But aren't I supposed to know these truths? And the truths will set me free?" Yes, but when it says, "Know the truth, and the truth will set you free," it means not with your mind, but as an observer, as someone bearing witness. You witness that spirit at the center of your being. It manifests itself, and when it does, you are living as Christ, and all the impediments disappear. They dissolve without working on them. Do you see that? God is found in the still small voice. And so let the still small voice utter itself to you. And then you will find that you have all the power and all the presence that any saint or seer has ever had. All the power and all the presence. It is not your power. It is the power of God. And we want to be glorified with God's glory. What we need is the power of God, expressing itself through us and as us. See, you really do become the Christ, the divine consciousness. Let us be still now and see if there's more to be said. I feel the presence alive within me, and so I'm going to rest in it. I am that I am. It's really quite simple. Not easy, I know, but quite simple. I die daily. That's simple enough to remember. I, the human, must die, must diminish, must surrender, so that I within, that divine spirit, divine consciousness, can take over. And it will, and it does. And each time it does, a little bit more of your centuries of humanhood dissolves quietly. Sometimes it dissolves quite fiercely, but it does dissolve. And as it dissolves, there's more of Christ living where you appear to be. And you become consciously aware of that Christ living itself. It's wonderful. It's divine. It's beautiful. And so we must put off mortality, the human, and put on immortality, the Christ. And all of these principles and all of these meditations and all of these treatments are so that Christ may live. I live, yet not I. Christ liveth in me. That's an actual living experience. Christ in you, your hope of glory. And that glory is God's glory or Christ's glory. And it makes itself manifest. And so your work, even in world work, you are to die. Step a little to the side and bear witness to Christ and what it does. I live, no, not I, Christ lives. You see, this is our work, to die daily. This is our work to bear witness. This is our work to stay silent. This is our work to bear witness. God, thank you for these principles that transform a man of earth to Christ of heaven. And when and as you practice these principles, you bear witness to a whole new earth and a new heaven. You bear witness to New Jerusalem, which is the birthplace of Christ. New Jerusalem is within you. peace. Be still. Be receptive and bear witness. Stand still and bear witness. Enter the silence and bear witness. Listen for the still small voice and then bear witness. I hope you are walking this path with me and that you are seeing evidence of this Christ within you manifesting in your experience, as your experience. There's nothing better than this. All right, I'm going to be still for a moment. Maybe you'll join me. Peace. Be still. I am the way. All right, that makes about an hour, and that's the end of the chapter, part two of I Am That I Am, and I want to thank you for pulling this out of me. I want to thank you for the opportunity to pour this out. Thank you for being receptive. Thank you for entering this consciousness with me. Thank you for entering the silence. Thank you for being. God bless.